Alrighty, so these are the craters that we're looking at. They're called layered ejecta craters. They have this beautiful fluidized ejecta. They're observed on Mars. There's lots of them on Mars. And they're also observed on Ganymede. So again, association with water ice there. We don't see them on the Moon or on Mercury. So this is an example of kind of the classic impact crater features that you see on the Moon and on Mercury. And these are essentially ballistic ejecta. So material is excavated, it's thrown up, it follows parabolic curves and it hits the ground. So you have all these lovely rays and it doesn't experience a whole lot of movement subsequent to hitting the ground. So very different morphology to what we see with these thick fluidized ejecta blankets on many impact craters on Mars. So these features are thought to be associated with the excavation of subsurface water. That water is incorporated into these ejecta materials, and when it's deposited on the ground, it lubricates the flow of that ejecta and enables it to flow almost like a kind of muddy slurry and to give you these features. And that interpretation is consistent with where we see these features on Mars, so their association with regions of ice stability. It's also consistent with modelling and laboratory studies that are actually able to reproduce these morphologies, albeit on a much smaller scale, but using water-rich rocks. But there's still a lot that we don't know about them. How much water do you need, and can you also form these features without any water? And what is the role of atmosphere? Because we don't see them on all other water-rich bodies in the solar system, but they are also absent on the Moon and Mercury. So how do we reconcile water versus atmosphere and the role of those? The reason layered ejecta craters, or LECs, are so useful is that there's so many of them on Mars. So approximately 44% of the craters on Mars that still have their ejecta preserved show this morphology. So that means we have a lot of them to look at. And craters are really useful, as this schematic shows, because they excavate into the subsurface, and this ejecta here, so the blue stuff, so here for a simple crater and a complex crater, this ejecta originates from the top approximately third of this crater depth. So you can, using the range of diameters of craters that we have on Mars, we can look at materials that were excavated from kilometres beneath the subsurface. So they provide us with a method for essentially sampling and looking at the subsurface stratigraphy using remote sensing. Previous work that I've done on these features helped to justify the use of these features as probes of subsurface water ice. We found that target volatiles, or the presence of water ice that was excavated by these craters, is an important factor in understanding the features, essentially, of these impact craters. So essentially, the point of this was that it justifies the use of them as probes of subsurface water on Mars. So what we wanted to do in this study is to look at the thermophysical properties of the layered ejecta. And by thermophysical, it means essentially the properties of the material that relate to heat, so how they heat up and cool down. So we wanted to know, if we look in the infrared, in the thermal infrared, and look at the properties of this ejecta, can we learn a bit more about how much water was incorporated into that ejecta? And can we also look at grain size, so how much fine content, how cohesive this ejecta is. We also wanted to understand how this layered ejecta is emplaced on the surface, because there's a number of different hypotheses to understand how this material kind of flows. And we're looking at craters in Chrysi Planitia, which is an impact basin, and it contains extensive fluvial deposits. So a lot of large outflow channels like Cassi Valles, Aries Valles, have emptied their deposits into Chrysi Planitia. And there are many layered ejecta craters there. So we wanted to see if we can learn about that vertical composition and layering within Chrysi Planitia. So we looked at 20 craters within the basin. We looked at them in nighttime infrared data. The reason we use nighttime is that the thermal emission that we're looking at is more sensitive to grain size. So the changes in temperature are essentially dominated by changes in grain size and also the abundance of rocks on the surface and how cemented together the surface materials were. If you use daytime thermal emission, you would also have a lot of effects with albedo, so just the brightness of the materials and their mineralogy, also slope effects as well. So we use nighttime to reduce some of that. Some of the impact of those factors. So by looking at nighttime emission, we can provide constraints on the kinds of surface materials that are present in this ejecta, distinguished by their grain size. So from fine-grained through to coarse-grained, high rock abundance, and also ices as well. So we can learn about the physical properties of those materials. We also looked at the radial organization of these grain sizes through looking at the distribution of brightness temperatures within the ejecta. If we take the temperatures within the ejecta blanket of one of our craters and bin it up into five different temperature bins, so from cool materials through to hot materials, we can then have a look at how those temperature bins are distributed around our crater. So if this is our crater rim here, so we could imagine two sort of end member perfectly organized cases. So here we would have hot materials through to cool materials as you go radially outward into your ejecta blanket. So this would be consistent with the trend of coarse materials to fine materials. And that's kind of what you would expect in a purely ballistic case. So the large blocks or these hot materials didn't travel very far, whereas the material that had the most energy, it was thrown out with the most energy, is more highly shocked, more highly fragmented, and so it travels to the edge of your ejecta blanket and it's fine-grained. We could also imagine that you might have the inverse case where you go from cool materials through to hot materials. So that would be something that is inversely graded. So we were curious to see whether we saw any radial organization in the ejecta of these craters. So the reason that we're looking at grain size and how this relates to water is that the grain sizes and their distribution are determined by a number of things, but one of those factors is the water abundance of those target rocks, the pre-existing rocks that were excavated by the craters. So how does that work? So we can quantify the role of water firstly by looking at grain sizes, and that's because the abundance of water within the target rocks affects the strength of that material, and that means it affects how that material breaks up when it experiences shock, so how it fragments. And laboratory studies and like nuclear blast studies as well, have demonstrated that when you have a more water-rich target, you get a lot more fine content when it's fragmented. So you get a lot more fine-grained materials. So this is something we can test for. The other role of water we would expect to see is that it would give you a less viscous mix of the ejecta materials, which would enable them to flow a lot more effectively across the surface. So you would expect that the ejecta might be more mobile, it would get further from the crater rim, and also it would be more sinuous as well, so more of those lobe features that we see. So we came up with a number of hypotheses that we could test for. I won't go through them very much. I'm only just going to talk about two of them. But this is what we would expect for certain target compositions, what we would expect to see in the grain size data. So here's an example of some of the data. So here we have a portion of an ejecta blanket, and you can kind of see the rough hummocky areas and then smooth areas with radial striations, so it's sort of rougher, smoother, kind of alternating. And if we look at it in temperature data, those textures correlate with hot regions and cool regions in the ejecta. So also as an example of some of our radial organization, we saw some craters that appeared to be quite well normally graded. So that's coarse to fine, and that's consistent with what you would expect in a ballistic case. Obviously, this wasn't purely ballistic because it experienced some of this flow, but they were quite well organized from hot through to cold. And we also saw the inverse. We saw some craters that appeared to be largely inversely graded, so from fine to coarse. So in terms of our two hypotheses, We found some craters that were consistent with excavating within a volatile pore target, so something that didn't have a lot of water. They were normally graded, they had low ejector mobility, so their ejector hadn't travelled that far from the crater rim, and these were also craters that were smaller, telling us that they excavated less deep into the subsurface. So they might be consistent with the near-surface volatile pore layer. And we saw the opposite. We saw craters that indicated that perhaps they excavated into something that was rich with water ice. They had higher ejector mobility. They were more lobate. And these had a much higher fraction of fine grain materials in their ejector, which is also consistent with possibly more water in that target rocks. But they showed no organization. They were more chaotic in how those materials were distributed, and they were larger. And I'm just going to wrap it up by saying that we can synthesize our results into a stratigraphic model of Chrysoplanitia. And I'll finish it there. Thank you very much.